KNKT. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back into ABQ Connect. Holly Slade and Dave Slayton Associates Realtors are sponsors of the programming on KNKT and ABQ Connect. Call Holly and Dave and the rest of their team at 342-8100 when you first start thinking about selling your home or buying a new one. Holly and Dave Slayton Associates, doing business by the book. Call Holly and Dave at 342-8100 or reach Holly or Dave on the web at abqhomeseeker.com. I'm joined today really by one of my good friends, and I love to talk to you, Doug, retired state police officer Doug Bolick. But, Doug, we're talking today for a very sad reason. We lost last week one of our state police officers, Darian Jarrett, 28, and he was doing a simple traffic stop on Interstate 10 near Aquila Flats east of Deming, and he ended up being killed by the person that he stopped. Doug, our hearts are broken, and I wanted you to have a chance to talk about what it's like to be a state police officer. Obviously, honor Officer Jarrett and talk about it. How are you doing, Doug?
Well, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Jim. I really do appreciate being given the chance to talk with you and discuss a little bit about what happened last week and the things that we did and are still doing in the state police. So in regard to this case that happened last week, it's my understanding that Officer Jarrett did conduct a traffic stop, and he was working in conjunction with Homeland Security. And it doesn't sound to me like this was a random traffic stop for a violation. Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like this was a person, a known felon, that he was stopping on behalf of Homeland Security, which isn't unusual. Usually when there's surveillance projects that are taking place either by HSI or even narcotics agents, that they'll request officers conduct traffic stops. They have to develop some form of probable cause to make that stop. But when they make that stop, they can go through the regular procedures of asking to search vehicles and things like that. There's always a heightened level of danger in doing these stops, and I don't know how it all went down at that traffic stop. I have no idea where Officer Jarrett was in relation to the incident taking place. All I know is that it turned out to be tragic for everybody involved. Yes. And it went from there. But in issues like this, these traffic stops can be of a heightened nature, and officers know that going in. Absolutely.
Doug, let me ask you that. Let's just play right into that. I mean, state police officers are a lot of times by yourself in your own car in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico. And I've driven all over this state, so I know what it means to be isolated out on a certain area. So you really are, at the most, maybe two of you are together. So tell me, do state police officers, I know you go through extensive training, I don't mean to, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek question, but are you guys aware of the danger that you're committing to every day to protect us?
Absolutely. You know, as a state police officer, and you're absolutely right, that they end up in the middle of nowhere, absolutely nowhere. And it's not uncommon for a state police officer to be in a particular location and ask for backup. And that backup may be 30 minutes to an hour and a half away for any kind of assistance. I spent part of my career in the Las Vegas district, and that district encompasses the entire northeastern section of the state. And there were times where I would be on I-25 in between Springer and Las Vegas. The only thing I had to look at were cows and milepost markers, and that was it. But it isn't uncommon for these officers to be out in the middle of nowhere by themselves. And it's not just our major highways. I mean, it's tiny roads. It's back roads, it's forest roads, it's the whole entire state. And, you know, one of the things that the state police does is we try to teach the officers to use their mind, use their common sense in dealing with the situation. They need to be able to talk professionally, look professional, and just act professionally. And if they can do those things, then chances are good for that officer that it's going to play out the way they want it to. You know, there's no substitute for showing up to something and looking like, just looking like you know what you're doing. That's why if you see a state police officer, they're going to be polished. They're going to have, their brass is going to be shined. Their leather is going to be kept clean. Uniform is going to have be in tip-top condition, pressed, looking neat, all the way down to the boots. It's just unbelievable what we try to teach these officers to be like. And just showing up, like I said, to a situation looking like you know what you're doing, that'll handle a majority of the problems that, that they may already encounter when they're out on the out in the community.
Doug, I want our listeners to know, you and I have been friends for a really long time. I think when I first met you, you were probably, what, 17, 18 years old? And you are a fellow basketball player. We love playing together and having a good time. We work together at the Boys and Girls Club of Albuquerque. Doug, you were always, you know, a massive amount of energy, kind to everybody, that kind of thing. And what you did for most of your career as a state police officer, you really had to face evil. You really had to face really desperate situations. You were also protecting our governor for many, many years. How did you know, Doug, that you're the kind of person that would run to the fire instead of away from it?
Well, going through that state police academy, that brings a lot of it into play. And, you know, Jim, I believe that all of us in this world, all of us, we all have a calling. There's something that we all do well, or there's many things that we do well. And for me, it's talking to people and dealing with people. And it's not something that I readily knew when I got into the state police. But once you're on your own, I started developing all those skills and realizing that this is something that, that I really love doing. And it actually, gave me an opportunity to get into our crisis negotiations team, which worked with our tactical unit. And so I, for a period there, I was the commander of that team, and for a number of years responded to incidents all over the state, whether it be a barricaded subject, maybe some kind of other situation involving weapons, things like that, and getting a chance to talk to individuals and just relate to them my experiences and things that they're going through. And that I found for me was just a catalyst in who I am and what I can do. And so I realized that that was my calling, was talking to people. And so I was in the right place at the right time for what went on in my life. And like I said, I believe that God's the one that put me there. And I still to this day use those skills to the best of my ability. The other thing that I did was I was the commander of our critical incident stress debriefing team, also known as POST, the peer officer support team. And I commanded that detail for a few years. And that's the detail that responds to the incidents like Officer Jarrett's, where we have officers and their families, our civilian employees, in need of some kind of critical response, critical incident response. So this goes not just for the officers involved in, let's say, an officer-involved shooting, but it goes for our dispatchers that are involved in that incident. It goes for the secretaries that are at the office that may be having some type of family issue or something like that, some kind of outlet for employees and their families to reach out to when there is a critical incident. And I know for a fact that in Officer Jarrett's case that that POST team was on scene immediately, and I can tell you for a fact that they're still down there working with the families, the officers down there. We still have to go through a funeral. I mean, this is going to be incredibly difficult for everybody involved. So this stretch from last week until where we're at right now, I mean, this is the worst of the worst, and we have officers that are involved in this that are reaching out and finding resources that may be available to make sure that those that need it get the help that they need, because this is something that all of us have experienced some kind of traumatic incident at one time or another. And you think about how you got through that. What is it that got you moving forward through that incident? And that's one of the things that this debriefing team is going to do, is they're not going to get people over this incident. There's no getting over it. Absolutely not. This is going to live with some individuals the rest of their life. This is going to live with our department the rest of their life. But one thing that we do is we get people through it. We don't get them over it. We get them through it. And it's through a different series of resources and tactics and things like that, that we can make sure that all our employees and their families get through this healthy and better off than if there was nothing there to begin with.
Doug, here on KNKT, you are speaking today to a largely faith-based audience, people that have Jesus as their Lord and Savior. They believe in prayer. And I guarantee you that, and I'm going to mention to you a little bit later in our interview, that you may not realize how many people are praying for our first responders, for our state police officers, for our APD officers and departments around the state. We want to pray also for Gabriella, and she has two children, and now they don't have a dad. Darian Jarrett, again, 28 years old, state police officer, killed on February 4th near Deming. Absolutely tragic. And Doug, what would you like us to know and understand about the commitment and sacrifice police officers make when you put on the uniform?
Well, Jim, as we all know, like I said earlier, this is a calling, and being a state police officer is different than being a regular patrolman or police officer for a local agency or a sheriff's department, for that matter. And I'm not knocking these other agencies. We have outstanding officers and deputies that work for these other agencies. Some of our my closest friends in the whole world, and I would go to battle with them at any time, anywhere. But being a state police officer, it has a special meaning to it. And, you know, the training is just a little bit different than what the other officers get in the academy. We have our own New Mexico State Police Academy, and the requirements to get through that academy are a little bit more stringent than the regular LEA requirements for other agencies. New Mexico State Police officers have to qualify with their weapons on the LEA requirements, and then there's also state police requirements. So when a regular police department goes to the range to qualify, it may be a simple round of two different rounds that they have to shoot as far as qualifications. They have to qualify just twice or maybe once. A state police officer has to qualify four times. They have to go through that LEA requirement, and then they have to go through the state police requirement. So beyond that, I know that for me especially, when I put on a uniform and I went to work every day, there's something special about wearing that black and gray uniform. And there's a tradition and there's a history there. And, you know, You see it in the news all the time. Officers, they're involved in some kind of critical incident. Just a couple days ago, if not yesterday, there was an incident in Bernalillo County where a deputy ended up getting in a police-involved shooting. And, you know, these happen on a regular basis. And, you know, I know a lot of community members, they get upset. You know, they don't know the facts of what happened, why the officer did what they did. In a state police involved shooting, it just seems like the attitude is, well, if the state police were involved, then they had it coming, which is a horrible thing to think or a whole horrible thing to say. But the training level that state police officers have just indicate that must have been really the last resort if an officer used their weapon. And, you know, Jim, you don't see it on the news enough, everything that happens with not just the state police, but other officers across the state and across the country. I mean, there's contacts happening constantly every day. And, you know, you and I had, you had sent me some information regarding statistics and things like that. And it talks about the number of contacts and things like that that police have. But knowing that not all these numbers are absolutely factually correct, they're approximate. But one thing that is correct is in the millions of police contacts every day across this country, less than 1%, less than half of 1% actually end up in some type of incident, and especially one that's fatal. And so that all goes into training. It goes into thought, and it goes into just how officers react and how they act in certain situations. And so, you know, for me as an officer, we talked about being faith-based, and I very much am myself. And for me, you know, being out there by myself, arresting people and dealing with, you know, I could be with a carload of drunk individuals, three of them have warrants, and I'm out there by myself with them in the middle of the night. It's a scary situation, but like I said, based on training and how an officer handles himself and persevering through those traumatic or difficult times, and also having that love in your heart, knowing that you are protected. And for me, like I said, I am faith-based, and I don't have a care in the world about what's going to happen to me. Do I want to die? No, absolutely not. But am I afraid to die? I'm not, because I know where I stand with the Lord. I know that when it's my time and He wants me, then that's when I'm going to go. One of the sayings that I like to use, Jim, is, you know, fear is something that we can control. We can control fear. Danger, that's a different story. Danger is very real, and we need to be aware of it. But being fearful is something that we can control. And I think that's something that we get across to our state police officers, that are just not afraid, you know. And unfortunately, sometimes it catches our officers off guard. But at the same time, you know, it does give those officers that courage to do what they do on a daily basis. And, you know, for Officer Jarrett's situation, this is a family situation. I never met Officer Jarrett. I never met his wife, Gabrielle. I knew nothing of the officer until last week. But the second that news blurb came across my phone, just like it did everybody else's, my heart dropped to the floor when I saw those four letters, NMSP, and then officer dies. That just crushed me. And I can tell you also for a fact that not only did it affect every state police officer personally, but it affected the retirees such as myself as well. I can tell you that, you know, I'm still friends with a lot of retired state police officers, and you know, we're all friends on Facebook, and my Facebook just lit up with people posting, you know, pictures of a state police badge with the black sash across it. And it just is amazing, especially in the outpouring like you just talked about from others that are non-law enforcement related, that were reaching out as well and showing their support for Officer Jarrett and his family and the department. You know, you don't see it every day. And, you know, it's sometimes you wonder in the back of your mind, just why am I doing this? But after what happened to Officer Jarrett, unfortunately, you know, it brings out the best in people. And in this last 5 or 6 days, it's just been incredible the amount of love and support that has come from everywhere, from all over the state, and people that are non-law enforcement. And the other thing, Jim, I just wanted to say was, you know, you talked about all the prayers and things that are going on. And, you know, I got phone calls from friends of mine in my basketball community that wish me condolences and sorry for the incident that happened. And I mean, for them to call and tell me, and it's almost like, you know, Officer Jarrett was my son. Absolutely. But he was family, no doubt. And I think a lot of people that aren't law enforcement realize this, and they know that there is that incredible bond there. And, you know, it's just something that'll live with us, even non-law enforcement, for a long, long time.
There, the New Mexico State Police Association has established a fund for Officer Darian Jarrett's family, his wife Gabriella, and their two children. You can mail donations to benefit the family to NMSP from the New Mexico State Police Association to P.O. Box 36024, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87176. Doug Bullock, he's a friend of mine and a retired state police officer, kind enough to visit about this sad event of last week. And we want our listeners to come alongside this family and not only to help them financially, but to also pray. And we're going to be back to talk more with Doug in our second segment. Stay with us here on ABQ Connect.
I'm Rob Sneed, general manager at Power Ford. All dealerships have the same incentives. Big rebates, customer cash, we've all got them. The difference is in what the dealership does for you. And at Power Ford, it's all about you. You get a better deal and a better experience. Every vehicle comes with the confidence of a 100,000-mile warranty and roadside assistance. Find your ride at mypowerford.com or just come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
Early Christian education should glorify God by providing an orderly, nurturing, and stimulating atmosphere for students exploring the world around them. Calvary Preschool strives to do just that. Each child who attends grows mentally, physically, socially, and spiritually as they interact with a loving, caring group of adults and peers. Registration for the 2021-2022 school year opens on February 16th. Visit calvarychurchpreschool.com today for more information. That's calvarychurchpreschool.com.
The most important information anyone can receive comes from an understanding of the Bible. Only here do we find direct revelation about all things, about life and relationship with God. Life doesn't always provide us with time or opportunity to break away and study the Bible full time. That's why KNKT is dedicated to presenting round-the-clock teaching by some of the best communicators we can find about Scripture and how it relates to our lives. We need to be exposed to the full counsel of God's Word. And now, KNKT presents a Bible School of the Air. Each Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., KNKT will present Through the Bible, verse-by-verse teachings by Chuck Smith and Chuck Missler. Skip Heitzig, followed by a question-and-answer session with Scott Richards. We'll be rotating through the Old and New Testament, so drop into our Bible journey at any time and go through the entire Word of God with us. The KNKT Bible School of the Air. Tuition is free. The rewards are eternal. Take your seat Saturdays at 9 a.m. on 107.1 FM.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. I'm on the phone this afternoon with retired state police officer Doug Bullock. Doug, you mentioned the support that you're getting from retired state police officers around, how you're supporting each other, really, officers around the state. This is a terrible blow that Officer Darian Jarrett was killed last Thursday, February 4th. Absolutely tragic, and our hearts and our prayers go out to them. We talked a little bit about being a police officer, and in this day and time of civil unrest, Doug, in our first segment, you mentioned that out of the millions of contacts around the country, 2.5 is what I found on the internet, out of 2.5 million contacts per day, there are so few shooting incidents, and there are, obviously, there is no excuse for racial profiling. There is no excuse for prejudice that leads to someone's death. And more importantly, there's not an individual. Even bad guys, I would say, are not expendable. But in order to protect the public, like I watched that terrible, terrible video of the person that shot Officer Jarrett was tracked down by a crack team of state police officers and local law enforcement in Deming. And the guy jumped out of his car and started shooting at people. Well, obviously, in order to protect the public, you have to take him out. And they did so very professionally. One police officer, an additional police officer, was shot, but apparently is okay. So, Doug, these stats just indicate that we don't have a systemic problem of racism. We have some bad apples, and I know your training and your interaction with one another and your care for one another when you're serving, those people are largely weeded out, aren't they?
Yeah, they tend to take care of themselves. And, you know, this individual that caused all this last Thursday, you know, if you were able to see the full video of when the pursuit ended in Las Cruces, you know, there was a Las Cruces officer that conducted a pit maneuver. It's a maneuver where you disable a vehicle and get it to stop. He executed it perfectly. And as that truck was sliding to a stop, before the wheels even stopped rolling, that guy had already had 2 feet on the ground, was out running with a pistol and shooting. This is an individual that was prepared. He was ready for a confrontation that day, and it's obvious by what occurred with Officer Jarrett and then at the conclusion of this pursuit. In his mind, he wasn't going to be stopped, and he wasn't going to be taken alive, and he was going to take whoever he could with him in this incident. And he tried, and, you know, we saw the outcome of this whole thing. And like you said, there was a Las Cruces officer that took one in the shoulder. He's going to be okay, thank goodness. And we all move forward from there. But, you know, you talked earlier, Jim, about pure evil. And I've seen pure evil. I've dealt with pure evil. I've been in a room alone with pure evil. The last time we had an officer, a state police officer, die at the hands of another was Officer Lloyd Aragon back in 2001. And in that incident, he was laying down a spike strip. He and another officer were on their way to federal court in Albuquerque from Grants, and they overheard a pursuit coming from Grants for a couple of shoplifters. And they turned around and went back, laid down a spike belt on Interstate 40 in between Grants and Albuquerque. And during that incident, the driver of the vehicle that was being pursued, in an attempt to avoid the spike belt across the highway, swerved into the median, ended up striking Officer Aragon and killing him. And that was our last time that an officer was killed by another person in the line of duty, so I can remember. We've had many incidents of officers dying in crashes and unfortunate incidents like that. But this just doesn't happen to us on a regular basis. It just doesn't. And if you look at the history of the state police, you know, they have a memorial in the Department of Public Safety headquarters that shows all the officers from the state police that were killed in the line of duty. And there's only a handful since the inception of the department in 1935 that have died by the hand of another. And so, again, it just goes to show what the officers have to deal with on a regular basis, and, you know, the training and being prepared. And I can tell you for a fact, our officers are prepared. And, of course, in a situation like this today, this puts our officers, not just our officers, but officers from all other agencies on high alert, because now, you know, we have this individual that did what he did last Thursday, and we have the sentiment of a lot of people in this country as far as law enforcement goes. We're being stacked up against our profession by lawmakers, both at the federal level and especially at the state level. And it's just something that it's making it more and more difficult to be a police officer. And, you know, a lot of this stems, Jim, from that incident in Minneapolis last May, involving George Floyd. And, you know, the country just went nuts as far as police brutality and the issue of police contacts and the use of force, really. And, you know, it's something that has touched every corner of this nation. I kind of relate a story to others that, you know, on May 24th, the people in my profession were good people. You know, we were seen as favorable. There were those people that were upset with police, obviously. You can't make everybody happy. But May 24th, you know, we were making TikTok videos and singing, lip syncing songs and things like that. And then all of a sudden on May 25th, I was accused of being a racist and that my only sole purpose of being a police officer was to kill Americans that aren't strongly represented. And, you know, it went from day to night, all in a matter of just one incident. And as horrible as it is, you know, obviously that doesn't represent me. That doesn't represent 99.9% of the officers that are out there. And, you know, yes, we do have some bad apples, absolutely, and they need to be weeded out. And there's a procedure for that. And there's things in place that departments use on a regular basis to weed those individuals out. And, you know, those bad apples, unfortunately, are the ones that have given us a bad name. Yeah. And it really is hurtful, and it's really hard because that's not who we are. You know, the majority of police are out there to help people and make their community safer and stronger. And, you know, a lot of agencies, and especially the state police, have worked very hard in this last year to relate that to our communities. And, you know, earlier Jimmy said that people in our community are praying for us, and it's so visible because, you know, our officers are still doing outreach programs to communities, doing a lot of community policing projects, and the community is receptive. And, you know, during this last election, and I'm not going to make it political, but, you know, a lot of people that were Trump supporters are also law enforcement supporters. And, you know, we had a law enforcement appreciation day where the streets all over this country were lined up with that blue line flag and people in support of us. And so, yes, we know that the public is out there and that the majority of our communities absolutely love their law enforcement and are 100% confident with the service that they're getting. But there is that war that we're having to face on a daily basis. And unfortunately, that's the stuff that we're seeing on TV and that we're reading in the newspaper. And very rarely do we see, you know, those officers going shopping with underprivileged kids. Very rarely do we see that news story about that officer that took some underprivileged kids to the store and out of his own pocket bought them Christmas presents or groceries or something like that. And so a lot more of that exists than what we're seeing on the evil side that we see in the media every day. And our officers know that the public is behind them, but there's that 1-2% that we have to be very cautious of. And that's what we try to do.
Well, Doug, I will tell you that myself and our listeners here on KNKT, we absolutely support the police. We do pray for you. And I want you to know the prayers are much more comprehensive than maybe you even imagine. We have right now, through New Mexico Praise, over 150 churches in New Mexico. Over 10,000 people are praying for you and all of our first responders 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the chairman of New Mexico Praise is Pastor Richard Mansfield here in Albuquerque. He served as an Albuquerque Police Department chaplain for 26 years. He's a guy that walked through a lot of grief and a lot of trauma with a lot of officers, and he's the guy that is in charge of coordinating all this prayer. And he wanted me to tell you that you are being prayed for. I know you're still serving in law enforcement out at the Sandia Pueblo. So, my friend, we've already run out of time. I want to thank you so much. Again, we want to pray for and encourage all we can and help Darian Jarrett and his family. His wife, Gabrielle, has now been left with two children. If you'd like to support the family, please make a donation to NMSP for the New Mexico State Police Association, P.O. Box 36024, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87176. Officer Doug Bullock, I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much for protecting us, and hope to get to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity, Jim.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.